I'm Abby.
I'm Evan.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to The Fashion Hags.
We love to love
and love to hate
all things fashion.
Hey. And we're back, episode 81, Children.
Fashion Hags.
Children of the Hags.
Hello, childrens.
We're back. Hello. In the basement.
Haglet.
Yes. Hello.
Let's get the energy.
Let's do it. Monday night recording. Yes. Yeah.
Monday, everyone. Everyone's favorite day.
Everybody.
We're all in a sweatshirt. Oh, I guess Evan's. I mean, you're in as much of a sweatshirt as you can pull off.
It's Evan's like, either this or naked.
Yeah.
I'm layered. I'm definitely. I'm not wearing like a whole parka and scarf and everything. Clutching my bag like I've known to do in the past.
And you've got like a sort of a worky shirt,
yeah,
on, which is basically as close as you're gonna get to a
yeah a black flannel.
There you go.
And my the craft.
Oh my god,
t-shirt.
Your craft t-shirt, fantastic. Yeah, Lettuce and feathers, stiff as a board.
Yeah.
You've had that for a while.
Praise
the Lord. It's really good. I'm taking a picture right now so we can have this forever.
Have it in the archive.
Yes. Share it.
Yes.
He's also happy as a little girl. He's doing some Dieter Sprockets.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Making his little boobies.
Sprockets. Mm-hmm. I'm in my mom's old sweatshirt that fits me better than any sweatshirt I've ever owned in my entire
life.
Always
the weird ones, eh?
It's always
the weird ones.
Like high school branded Cougars.
Jasper Cougars.
Junior, senior high school. It was like her camping shirt, and we saw her camping. We went camping in the summer with them, and I was ill-prepared. And so I was like, can I wear your sweatshirt? She's like, yeah. And so I wore it for a couple of days, and I was like, this shirt
You're
fits
not getting
me
it back.
Better than any shirt. Like, are there any more of these at the school that I could
Sure,
is
there
go
a box
and buy?
Of them in a
She's
car?
Like,
yeah.
you can have that one. It's no big deal. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, that was not what I was getting at. Like, if there's another one I can go and buy, I will go and buy. She's like, please just take it. It's my camp shirt. I was like, great. It fits me perfectly.
Perfect.
Yeah. It doesn't usually leave the house, but sometimes it leaves the house.
It's all right.
Feels real good.
That's fine.
We had an exciting event happening to us last week.
Yes. We actually got out in a non-podcast related.
It was a spur of the moment event for
you.
Me. You guys had plans. Well, you guys, you start your evening off because I joined at the very end.
Yes.
So I'll
well, my husband Dave had hockey tickets, but he didn't want to go because he'd been to a bunch recently and he was just hockeyed out, which is weird for Dave because he doesn't usually get hockeyed out. But everyone has their limits, I guess. And then he said, do you want to go and take somebody? And then I was like, who can I take that would not really ever experience this?
You took me once and we had a blast.
So fun.
Yeah.
The funnest.
Could not tell you who played. No idea.
We didn't even notice there was a game starting until like 3/4 of the way through. We're like, oh yeah, they're playing hockey, I guess. But I was like, no, if Evan doesn't want to go with me, then someone else, another two people can have the tickets because I don't want to ask anybody else if Evan doesn't want to go. Because I don't think it would be something you would ever choose.
Never.
Or get the chance to really do. I don't think any of your friends are super hockey fans.
No, and they would know better than to waste the experience on me.
And
but like, I think
like
the
Dave
fact
got
that
the
that
tickets
was
your, for free.
Yeah.
So like,
yeah, it's
I've,
not something
like,
you're going to throw a bunch of money on because you're
fine.
Like, this would be fun.
Just
it's like
fun.
Too expensive
yeah.
to do that.
It was
and they're
a
great
whole
seats.
Situation.
Yeah.
That
it was the same seats we were in.
Yeah, they're great.
Right behind the goal.
Yeah.
But like, you know, 20 rows up or whatever.
Yeah. It was very interesting to see a Vancouver Canucks game.
I was going
to
say, it's not a group of a subset of a cross section of the population that you see a lot of the
time.
Especially not a lot of fashion hags listeners.
Yes.
No.
As a queer indigenous man, I don't think that's you're seen.
No, not really.
Terribly.
But there are queer indigenous people who fucking love hockey.
Absolutely.
Emily Riddle is one of them.
There you go.
But
just not this queer indigenous person.
But I realized about like as we were walking into the arena that there was going to be a lot of boys there.
I was going to say there's great people watching.
There were a lot of beautiful men at the hockey game, which was cute.
Despite their backwards baseball caps.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing to get over when you go to a hockey game. But yeah. I mean, you know that's what you're getting when you go.
There's going to be sports people and they're going to be drunk. And we did witness some, or we did not entirely witness, but saw like some kerfuffle over on the other
side. On the other side of the arena.
Where like, there was like a huge fight and like.
Like three rows of people.
Yeah. And like a bunch of people, like they called the police in, like it wasn't even security. They called the police in. Of course, they were way far away and we didn't know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But there was drama.
Did I ever tell you guys about the time I was at a hockey game in Edmonton and they do like the kiss cam or the like just people around in the whatever. And they show this girl and she goes, she realizes she's on the Jumbotron and she flashes her tits.
Nice.
And it was a collective
instinct.
It was a collective like 35,000 people intake this like giant gasp of air and then go like it was unbelievable.
Tits or get the fuck out. I mean she
knew what was up.
Yeah.
She jumped right on it. She had no shame. It was so great. And then we're like, where is she? Because, like, we don't give a shit about that game now. Because, like, where is she? We're looking around and you can see, like, security start to, like, come into this certain area and find her. And she's, like, you know, super into
she's
it.
She's into it. She's stoked.
She doesn't give a shit. And so then this security comes down. You can hear everybody's like, boo! And they go and take her away. I was like, yay, sports! Sports is the best!
Oh, boy.
It was great. It was like, and I was with
if a man showed his boobs, no one would care. No, in fact, they'd high-five him and give him a medal.
In fact, two guys ripped their shirts off.
There was, when, we did see at the very end.
Yeah, when it was...
It was getting tied and there was like shoot out or something.
It was a hang... I was busy looking
at the dogs that were next to the two shirtless guys, but anyway.
Oh, yeah. Then there was a guy with the two dogs.
What
that was
dogs?
The situation.
Two big chows.
Yeah.
What?
Like a big, like, snowy one and then a gray one. And they were, like, emotional support animals. I saw him come down the stairs, and I was like, fucking dogs at this hockey game? This is amazing.
Was this Brady's dog
the best
night?
Hockey game I've ever been to. And then we saw him later walking around, and they had the little harnesses on that said emotional support animal. And he was so stoked. The dogs were so stoked. They're getting their picture taken with everybody. Oh my like, they're looking
and
around.
Chows are like not small.
No, and like big fuckers too. Like real floofy. Oh my, it was very entertaining. And
that's
two
good.
Bros took their tops off.
Took their tops off. Those bros. No one's taking their tops off. What scamps?
Yeah. Rascals.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and we ate some food.
Some great food.
And,
some great food.
Yeah, hung out.
And then we, about halfway through the game, we were just like, should we just like fuck around and go to, like see a drag show tonight?
Yeah. Because I was like, hey, do you want me to drop you off
at
your house? Are you going anywhere afterwards? Like, any other plans? Yeah. And you're like,
and
no.
I was like, but we could go to Brat Pack.
Thursday night.
Yeah.
So I thank you for that experience. It was...
Yeah, it's fun.
So we went. We drove back to my house, ditched my car, and then
hoofed it to the train.
Yeah, transited back downtown, called you or texted you.
Yeah, so I am actually miracle of miracles. I am at a show with another friend of mine,
former guest
Olivia, and we're at a show, which is not something I am normally at, especially on a school night. But there I was. I jumped at the chance to go. So we were at the show at the Rio, had a couple of drinks.
Across town.
Yeah, it's across. Yeah, we biked.
Yeah.
Did we bike? Yeah, we biked. And so it's like during the encore that I get this text from you guys. It's like, well, going to the drag show, Brad Pack.
It's like 10 o'clock or something.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Something like that.
And also the bar is like down the street from your
house.
It's
very close to my house. Yeah, it's conveniently close to my house. Yeah. It was that was a very big factor.
It was a well-timed. Yeah.
Well-timed, well-located. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I get this text and I was like, well, fuck, Abby's out without the kids. We never see each other outside of the podcast room, the three of us at one time. So I was like, when duty calls, you got to answer.
Opportunities arise.
She's coming. And I was already a little bit drunk, which was perfect.
Yeah.
Delicious.
So
just fuels your motivation.
Yeah. So I texted my husband. I texted him. I tried to convince Olivia to come, but she had a bunch of other shit to do. And,
well, you missed out, Olivia. Way to blow it.
I know, way to blow it. I think she was like getting on a plane the next day and a bunch of
excuses.
Anyway, so I was like, if you want to come, we're going. It's going to be super fun. And she's like, oh, I can't. And so I roll home. I lock my bike up. I go in and Chris is in bed. And I'm like, hey, I love you. I'm going to the drag show. Where's your wallet? I need some money.
I need $20. Where's your wallet? Do you have any cash?
Rolled in, pulled out a bunch of cash. Bye, I love you. See you later. I think I was home for 4 minutes. Dropped my bike, peed, got the cash out of my husband's wallet, and then I hoofed it up to meet you guys. It was perfect. I met you. You guys had just got in. Like you were maybe on your first drink.
We'd barely been like we've there maybe 10
minutes. The show hadn't started yet.
Yeah,
show hadn't started. No. It was perfect.
Yes. So explain what the Brat Pack is, Evan. You're more familiar.
The Brat Pack are...
There's four of them?
There's now four. There was...
Previously five.
The Brat Pack has been a story.
Is it like a more... Like kind of just amorphous sort of...
Yeah. Well, the Brat Pack has been a story. The Brat Pack has had five, six members. It's had four members.
Gotcha. It just depends on who's available.
It's amorphous. Yeah. It's transient.
Or who's getting
it's
along.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. But they're just like a drag troupe. And they... put on a drag show once a week in the West End.
And they have a blast.
Jem is there. Lady Jem is there. Thanks, Jem. Are the artists formerly known as Jem? Yes. then Kendall Gender.
Jem By the Smoker. Way, my husband's favorite drag name of all time, Kendall Gender.
Kendall Gender.
Yes. It is perfection.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
They all have great names.
Yeah. Jane Smoker.
And Geometric.
Geometric.
I mean, they're all perfection. They're all so good.
Fantastic. And they each have their own look, obviously.
They have their own situation.
And they're different than each other, which is nice.
But they also do really, really sick group numbers with the choreo and the moments.
Yes.
And it's a good time. And they just have, they create like a really fun atmosphere together. And their jokes are really great. And
They look like they were having a good time. And everybody there looked like they were also having a good time.
Support your local drag queens.
Yes.
If you don't have a local drag queen...
Find out where they are.
If you're in Vancouver, they're out there. Yeah. Thursday nights especially.
Get some small bills. And
And go and have it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So fun. It's such a fun.
You're not a fan of drag if you only watch Drag Race. You need to go and see local drag queens and see them perform in person.
You need to go give them cash money.
You need to see the artistry of holding space and holding a night like the way drag queens can do. It's like, it's something of magic.
It's a hell of a show. Yeah.
You know, there's games, there's debauchery, there's dirtiness, there's like, I don't know, it's really fun and uninhibited and unabashed. That's what I like about Brat Pack.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
And it's always a crazy crowd.
It's always a romp riot.
Yeah.
It's always a mixed bag of people. Always a mixed bag, which is fun.
Yes. Yeah. There's a bunch of gay dudes, there's a bunch of straight ladies,
lots
there's a bunch of everybody
women,
in between.
Straight girls love Brat Pack.
Yes.
But I don't know. It's
there was
really
a guy
fun.
There in a t-shirt and pearls.
It's fun to watch.
I loved it.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. Straight girls go into the middle of the stage when
they
a
were
drag queen
so
is performing
into it,
and then get like shoved off the stage.
Yeah,
you do not try and dance with a queen in the middle of a number ever.
No, no. Yeah. You give them your money and then you leave.
You will get the hook.
One of the other queens hook. Will get the hook and take you out.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's funny sometimes, and people are just like, oh, no, okay, no, okay.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. This isn't for you. Oh.
This is not your moment.
If you, we went to a show in Portland when I was there in the summer for a bachelorette party, and there's this club that we went to, like the drag show. There's a very clear stage, and it is much higher than the seating. So there's no division. There's no mistaking where one thing starts and the other thing ends. Like, this is the line you do not cross. If you want to, go up to give the performers money, there's a couple little stairs, but you...
And you just lean
You
in.
Just lean. They will come and take your money. That's not going to be
Yes, they will see you and they will come
they
and get it.
They will get it. Yeah, but you don't. But yeah, some of the places downtown here don't have that clear stage line. So it's a little bit like, no.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was fun. It was such a great call to get.
So
I was so stoked. I was like, they're coming. I'm going. I gotta go. I'm already out. If I wasn't already out, it would have been a way tougher call
because
I probably would have been in bed already.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least I would have had probably my pants would have been off.
You're past the point of you wanting
my
to
bra
actually
would
do
have been off.
About.
Although my bra being off probably would not have stopped me from going to a drag show.
Yeah.
So that would have been a pretty safe decision. Environment for me to not have a bra, and that would have been fine. But no, it was so great. It was such a fun night out. Thanks, Hags.
Yay!
Thanks, Brat Pack.
It was very exciting.
So we are, we got a request, an email request about, to talk a little bit more about fashion school. And so that's always fun.
Yeah.
Serena emailed Serena. Us. Hi, Serena. You emailed us and we thought this was
something we could
talk about.
Yeah. Retap into that time.
We probably have quite a few students.
Yeah. Who listen we talked to school. So. And it's come up a few times. Are people considering school? Right.
And we should.
Or a different path, not even necessarily fashion school, but just, you know.
And if you're curious to check out last week's episode or our last episode with Kat Sark and the community that she is building and helping to network the Canadian Fashion, or pardon me, Canadian Fashion Scholars Network on Instagram. All the links are up on last week's episode of fashionhagspodcast.com. So check that out if you're curious, if you want some more information. There's some cool stuff there. But we were going to come at it at
Kat has a different post-secondary experience than we did because she has a very university-driven, academic, theoretical, and we had the trade training more than anything academic.
The technical cut and sew kind of.
How to make a thing.
How to make a thing. How to design a collection. So we're going to come at this a little bit differently because we don't want to say things that we don't repeat ourselves too much because we've talked about fashion school a bit before. But we thought it'd be kind of fun to talk about what, you know, what we would like to have, you know, having left school and worked in the industry for a couple of years, what we would have liked to have learned more about in school, and also what we would like to, if we were going to teach something, what would we want to teach more? So we're going to kind of we're going to use this as a jumping off point. Who knows where we'll actually end up?
Who knows?
Yeah.
There's really no telling with this podcast because there's no one telling us what to do.
And when you dip into into the reserves of your memory, you never know where you're going to go.
It's true. And especially when you're sharing memories with other people.
Yeah, we could get it.
Or may not have been there and may or not remember the things the way they you did.
Exactly.
We should also say right up front that our fashion school experience is likely quite a bit different just in terms of when are we into school. We finished we started 2010. So that's now going on 9 years ago, which is a terrifying thought. But there's a lot that has changed in the industry. There's lots that's changed with social media. There's lots that would have changed curriculum wise. So there's some of that we can't specifically compare.
We don't know what it's like to go to fashion school now.
Yeah.
Yes.
And also, we did a diploma program at a private kind of school, like a private college style school. We did not do a degree program. We didn't do a graduate program like what Kat was doing last time. So just with that sort of framework caveat in place, no one's fashion school experience is going to be the same. Teachers change, programs change, whatever. So just keep that in mind. Don't take this as a
the be all end all.
As an end all be all. We've said it before, we are not experts.
Fashion non experts.
We just like to talk.
Yeah, we just like hearing our own damn voices.
Yes.
Yeah. So, where do you want to start, guys? Who wants to go first? Because I thought when we first started this podcast, I thought it would be a fun, we haven't really done segments really, but I thought it would be a fun thing to that has come up again and again and again. And it's the old, I wish I learned this in fashion school, or what they don't teach you in fashion school.
Yeah.
So like,
I can start with that one because I think it could bring it into all of our experiences.
Okay, go for
leaving.
It. Do it.
I wish I learned more about the business side of fashion in school.
Yeah.
And
I would agree with that.
I know that like when I was
we learned nothing about financing.
Nothing.
Or like the business part or like money.
Oh my God, you guys, Evan just ripped
a cork.
He just tore this table in half.
Oh my God, he hulked out.
Oh my God,
rage.
We are really in for it when Dave comes. Oh man,
hold on to your butts, people.
There's the tiny
and now it's on tape. We could have pretended that no one saw that, but now it's on tape.
Oh no. My $1
placement. Oh no, the rage that is flowing through right now. He gets so worked up talking about finance.
Fucking finances. Actually, you know, like in the last couple of years, like dealing with money and stuff has been, I've just been a lot more cutthroat about money.
Yeah.
And a lot more direct. Yeah. It's aided me. Like if I'm going to overextend myself, it needs to be for something that's going to eventually level me out life-wise. Like, I need to be able to...
Or push you forward.
Or push me forward. Or, you know, it's like deal with the realities of living in this city, you know? So it's just like, I won't do anything for free anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah,
and it's very rare when I will do something for free.
Yeah, there's got to be the right reasons, like you say.
Yeah.
For sure. We didn't do a lot of... And again, like we said, like we did the design stream and not the marketing and merchandising stream.
Yeah.
That in that side of things, there would be more business. But it sort of doesn't make sense that as a designer, you wouldn't have to know the finances.
Exactly. How to run a
even
business?
A basic
Well, I think level. I think like the way that the programs were built in that school, when we were going there, is because they thought that those students and us would be employed by another company and we'd be doing all of, we were learning how to work within a system. We weren't learning how to be a system. You know, we weren't given like all, like how, it wasn't like a how to start your own fashion company. You know, that's not what the program was. The program was to teach us how to make clothes and produce them and do
in an already existing framework.
Yeah. With someone who is going to deal with HR and buying and like
finance, venture capital
and all of that other PR, marketing, you know. They didn't teach us to be entrepreneurs, I guess, or self-sufficient in its own entity. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, we did like costing, costing out a garment, which is not the same thing as financing a business.
Exactly.
You don't learn about putting capital down, you know, investing capital into your business so that you have a product so that you can
and how
sell
to allocate
it.
That money to make sure that you can deliver.
How much is too much? How much is not enough? What, you know,
what should you spend money on and what should you skimp on? Yeah.
Those kinds of things are, so much of that comes with the territory. I think we would have all been a little more, it would have been a better, more rounded education had there been more focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
At the end of the day, it's business, right?
Yeah.
It's commerce.
Yeah.
Economic stuff, like it's money and banks and like, you know, so it's
It's weird because they were
like you said, entrepreneurial.
Yeah,
you know,
like when we were there, we were being told that we needed to do stuff that we would never do, that like we're taking this opportunity to do like high design, you know, and that was kind of what our prompt was. But then the other people in the other programs were being taught how to run like a regular luxury fashion company. You know, it's like the products that we were making, and then like just like the environment we were in. It was like two different worlds almost, but also we were, I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about that education lately, and I like it. I think it was sufficient for what
I needed.
It served me, obviously, you know.
You met us. I mean, come on.
Exactly. Like that alone.
Priceless.
But
we built two brands out of this thing.
Yeah, but like I've also realized that through being educated in that system, like there was a lot of stuff I needed to like rid myself of, you know, like weird expectations, especially with having to release multiple collections a year. That was a big thing that it took me a while to stop from that expectation.
You mean
that expectation
within that framework of having to deliver four collections a year or whatever,
or even two,
sure,
you know?
And to follow that calendar.
Yeah, to follow the calendar, that was something that took me a while to rid myself of.
Yeah, the calendar is a complicated... We haven't really talked about the fashion calendar and how it really... I mean, we've touched on it a little bit, but...
We've talked about how breakneck it is these days and how...
Yeah, but how it really is the... It's the main line.
That's the driver for everybody, for every... You know, person in the entire industry is when the clothes come out, when you show them,
right? And it's changed so much.
Yeah,
since production has
even
changed,
in the last like 4 years, it's changed so much.
It changed since we've been in school for sure.
Absolutely, it's changed a couple times over since we've been in school.
Yeah, definitely, because stuff gets done so much faster and is available visually much sooner than before to way more people.
Yeah.
Than before.
So that changes production. That changes when you show.
Calendars are still a thing that even now It's a big part of my job right now is like managing the calendar and managing the timelines and getting the work done so that the work that I do doesn't exist on an island. It's not, you know, there's all these other things that have to happen downstream after I get my work done. So if my work isn't done, then they can't do their work. And if their work isn't done ahead of time, then I can't do my work. And then it's catch up for everywhere else downstream. So when you're working for a big company, the calendar becomes so much more important because it's not just about hitting your deadlines. It's about the deadlines that have to be hit after yours do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a thing that's like, a much bigger, like half of what my managers do right now is just manage the calendar and everyone's by when dates.
Your deliverables or whatever.
Yeah.
Deadlines.
And for, obviously for a small company.
I was going to say yours, for a small company, it's equally because you have such a limited workforce being a person like you that only has one person or the company that I work for that has four people.
Yeah.
You need to plan in advance because you have to give yourself time to give that one person enough time to get it all done. Mm-hmm. Like you have to think far enough in advance because if you are the one person holding the bag and at the end of the day, you're like, fuck, this has to be delivered in 2 months or whatever deadline you've set or been given. Mm-hmm. There isn't enough hours in the day to do it all.
Exactly.
So you have to stay on top of it and you have to think long range and you have to, you know, especially things like ordering fabric, even just that. Like you have to have that fabric so far. You have to choose it. You have to choose the shapes. You have to have the samples ready so that when production comes, you have a 6 to 8 week lead time from the manufacturer of the fabric to get to the factory. So you have so that 6 week lead time leads to a year of all the other stuff to get to that point. Right.
You're also never working on only one season at a time. And
yes.
It is never happening.
No.
You are... Like, for example, on your example, let's start with the ordering fabric. So the ordering of the fabric happens at, let's say you're ordering fabric now for, what month is it? It's April. Oh my God, I totally forgot.
Oh yeah, Chris Garnham!
Happy birthday! I'm sorry, Dad, I meant to call you.
We even talked about
we talked about it right at the top. And I was like, can't forget, it's my dad's birthday. Shit!
You got it.
This is a good one, though.
Happy birthday to you.
Former podcast guest Chris Garnham.
Go back to episode 62. I even looked it up so that I would have this ready. 62, denim.
It's an amazing episode. We're not just saying that because Chris's dad. Chris is listening. It's also just a really interesting episode.
It's my favorite episode.
Talking about buying jeans.
Dad, happy birthday. Everybody, go wish my dad happy birthday wherever you are. Happy birthday, Chris Garnham. Give him a big old clink of a martini glass.
Yeah, there you go.
He's got one in his hand. If it's after, you know, 4 o'clock. anyway, it's April. We're ordering fabric, let's say, for fall. We're talking about ordering fabric for fall. Actually, maybe.
Even resort maybe or spring resort. 2021 even.
We're thinking about ordering for fall. We've picked them at least.
We need to finalize our choices.
Yeah, finalizing choices, which means the shapes are also being finalized. So the patterns for those have not yet been finalized. They'll be done shortly. So that's the pattern maker now we have to work with. That's the fabric people we have to work with. What's happening in store?
Internally, we're deciding the shapes and the things too. That's happening.
Yeah. So in store right now would be the spring collection. Mm-hmm. So then pre-fall is being produced in the factory right now. So that's now three seasons that we're looking at. We're also having to prepare for
the lookbooks for 2020 have to be made.
Lookbooks for wholesalers. Yeah, for all the wholesalers. So all the people who are going to be buying it for their little stores or big storage or wherever.
Yeah.
The photography is also being done. So the samples are also being done.
Yeah.
So you're pretty
much. And we're
much
thinking of shapes for 2021.
Yep.
To get that ball rolling, because that takes a bit of time to sit and ruminate.
Research and, you know, and research inspiration.
And decide what you want to do.
So at any given time, you're working at least four.
Yes.
If not five, probably, different seasons.
Different seasons, yeah.
And in my job now, too, I work for a really big company. So the work that we're doing is within one season, there'll be like the mainline track. There'll be a long lead time track. And there'll be a long lead time special packaging kind of a thing. So all of those are like adjacent to just the regular work.
Yeah.
So within every season, there's like three seasons within that season. So it's not like the calendar is like the biggest deal. And we didn't spend as much time on the calendar.
No.
That could be my thing that I wish we had learned more of. In fact, that might be it.
Yeah. With the day to day of what this actually looks like.
What an in-depth calendar thread actually looks like, because it is a foundation of
how many different plates you got to have spinning. You got to keep them plates spinning.
Like 1 month, like a season. So it's just like your spring, like a month in the spring, what would that look like to be preparing for the rest of your year?
Yeah.
And not only that, but like what I'm doing for that work for that season, but also the work that's being done adjacent to what I'm doing.
Exactly.
What's being done to prep for the work that I will be doing, what the designers are doing, what the merchants are doing, what the graphic designers are doing for packaging, what the stores and the visual merchandising people are doing to actually put it on a shelf. Mm-hmm. What is it going to look like on a hanger?
Yeah, what are the windows going to look like?
What's the e-com photography going to look like? All that kind of stuff. So that, if we can segue.
Yes.
That would be the thing that I wish we had a little bit more in depth of, like, how actually for real this calendar is. Like, oh yeah, the calendar track and blah, blah, blah. But if we could have probably spent...
We could have done a whole class on just the calendar.
Initially, I was going to say like production, a little bit more information about like the production, but that really is the same thing.
Yeah, that was going to be my thing. It's just more on actually like what needs to be made, like what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we can talk about that for sure.
To get it off the ground.
Yeah.
From inception, because, you know, when we were in school, we had the big final project is a three-piece collection. And then you have a portfolio, which is all your inspiration images and other, you know, graphic design layouts and things of how you're going to, and then the photography of your actual pieces.
It was actually a 10 look collection, but we only had to make three looks, just to clarify.
Yes. So we had to design 10 looks, but we only actually physically made three of them.
10 at least. Yeah.
Because you have to make a whole cohesive looking. The chances of you actually of having to design three pieces is slim to none. Like that's never enough to offer. So you need to do more, but it's just for time constraints, we're only able to make three looks. But yeah, so like part of it juggling how many things you got to be doing at once, but like, yeah, how things like, how do you find out where to buy fabric?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How like, does
even,
that
even
work?
At work now, we're trying to figure out somewhere where we can find silks. We're just interested in opening the idea of silks or silks blends or something or other. And like, we're just Googling.
Yeah,
like chumps.
Yeah, like a bunch of chumps.
Like a bunch of amateurs, to quote Moira Rose. But yeah, stuff like that. It's like, how do you...
The actual getting...
Is that maybe part of like the trade secrets kind of stuff that you only learn when you get access to those spaces and all that fucking bullshit? A lot of people are very
play the cards close to their chest.
I'm sure there were a lot of teachers who we knew in school who could have given us good connections to fabric places.
Oh, do you know there's giant textile conferences that happen?
Yeah.
And you can just go to a big convention center, wherever, like in Las Vegas or New York or Toronto or whatever, but that those exist.
Mm-hmm. Or that you can actually like reach out to a fabric company and say, hey, can I look at your fabric card in of these fabrics? Do you have these?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you do. Great. Send me some. Mm-hmm. Or
is it
no,
free?
You don't.
Does it have to pay $100 or whatever, right?
Yeah. What does MOQ mean? What does that mean? And what it means is minimum order quantity, but you have to know that to know that, oh, you can't just get 4 meters of fabric. You have to get at least, usually, even for a small company,
500?
At least, well, depending, probably not that. I mean, if you're a really small company, you could probably get, depending on the company, obviously, that you're getting the fabric from like 50 meters. 50 meters is a shitload of fabric.
It's a lot of fabric.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a lot. But you can't just roll. I mean, you could just roll in by 5 meters of fabric, but it will cost you a goddamn fortune to make a garment out of fabric that you have to pay.
Or even things
that
like,
high for.
Like part, and this is part of the business thing, like knowing that, and this, again, this is specific to where you're living, because this is all like legal stuff and stuff, like how to get a business license. What can you do with a business license?
What kind of taxes do you
What kind of taxes do you need to pay? Do you need to get an accountant? Do you need to, you know, like that sort of, because a lot of these places, especially for fabric, you have to have, you have to be a business. You can't just be anybody off the street. You just come in and just buy it, whatever, because of the minimum order quantities and stuff. And they just, they don't, they're not a retail.
Yeah, they don't sell to the public.
It's not, this is not Fabricana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This isn't Dresso.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, but to know like, oh, you need to go to the, I don't even remember what it is, but like the Canadian Revenue.
The CRA.
The CRA or something, and get a business number, and what do you pay tax on, and GST, which is a tax here in Canada, goods and services tax, and what does that mean, and do you have to pay it, and how do you have employees, or how are you, and like as an employee, what do you expect or require?
Yeah,
what do you legally, what are you legally supposed to have? So you know that, oh shit, I shouldn't be working, you know, over 8 hours a day without getting overtime,
mm-hmm.
without getting paid time and a half or whatever, you know, like stuff like that. Like that would have been nice to have somebody. So because when you're getting, we're entering into the industry, and especially one where there's a lot of fluidity, like we've talked about this before, how it's not a trade and it's not an art and it's not this. So there's so many people, there's so many people who operate as contractors,
mm-hmm.
right? As freelance, quote, or whatever. Like you, so you, they have all these loopholes. Like I remember looking up, trying to go after somebody to pay me money that they owed me, and realizing that there is specific stipulations in labor laws in our province that X, Y, and Z happens. If you get fired for this, or if you are owed money, these are the steps you can take to recoup your, except if you are in garment manufacturing.
Yeah.
And like two other things. I forget what they were.
Really?
Yeah.
Like it was a specifically mentioned thing. Nope.
Your rules don't apply.
Nope. You got to ask nicely or harass the person until they give you your money or take them to small claims court and just eat the cost of taking them to small claims court.
Really? I didn't know that.
So well, stuff like
there
that.
There you go. I didn't
And I
even
learned
know.
That the hard way, being fucked over for thousands of dollars and not getting paid and then realizing, oh shit, I have no recourse unless I take this person to small claims court, which will cost me half, if not more, than what I'm owed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not cool.
So stuff like that would have been nice to know.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's some things you can't foresee, like bad bosses. Sometimes you only find out too late.
Yeah.
I mean, this person is not a good business owner and not a good boss.
That's the truth across every.
But it's just like, that's not specific to this particular industry or that particular job. But
there should just be a class called People Are Shitty. Yeah. Here's how to avoid
how
them.
To navigate that and come out moderately unscathed.
Oh my god, if well, we could put a course together like that, we would be bazillionaires because everyone would take
Maybe
it.
Maybe we should open a fashion school.
How to train somebody to well that's the thing. If you found out that this was what you needed to do to run a business, you would be a better boss too.
Yes.
For your employees, because you would know I need to pay you X, Y, and Z. And you can say no to, if I ask this of you, you can say no. And then I have to figure it out. Or, you know, like it would make you a better employee. You'd be more informed, but it would also make you a better employer because you would know what your limits are and what you're allowed to do and, you know, where you have flexibility and where you don't.
Yeah, that would have been.
But again,
that
comes down to just the person and if they're shitty or not.
But I mean, that can easily be put into a curriculum. Anytime, again, it's that whole gray area of not a trade, not art, not a lot of things, but it's
a way
massive huge industry. Yeah.
It's something.
It employs millions of people around the world.
Yeah.
Maybe billions. Maybe
but
potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but
we,
things
what we do
like
know is
talking,
that it's a $1 billion industry.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Multi-billion dollar.
For sure. But yeah, back to your point about like the actual production of how to get a thing made too. Ordering fabric is only part of it.
Yeah. That's only one slice of it.
That's only one part.
How do you fit models. Do you get a fit model? How do you get the pattern person? How do you talk to a pattern drafter?
Is the factory that you're going to use, if you're going to use the factory, are they going to use digital patterns or are they going to use hard copy patterns? I've worked with both. You have to, the standards are quite different if you're working with hard copy patterns, which are admittedly few and far between, especially these days.
Sure, we have the issues.
They're just so cost inefficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're stupid.
Yeah.
when you don't need a meter.
You can get a computer to do it for you. You can do CAD, just AutoCAD it and it's.
But one of the reasons that we did that we had to make hard copy patterns for some of our pieces is because the guy who ran the factory was old and didn't
know
how to do digital, but he knew how to do hard copy. So
that's
I'm not going to make it without hard copy. So that was what we did. And there's not that many factories
that can sew at
around
that quality
here that are that high. You know, it's just, they just don't exist. Those, there's another thing. Getting it made. Are you going to get it made in China?
And what does that look like?
What the fuck does that even mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's, people are just like, oh, just get it done in China. Well,
do you just fly to China and knock on doors? Like, what do you do? Like,
how do you Who do you even talk to?
Yes.
Just call Beijing. Hello, I'm coming. Please make my shirt.
Make some t-shirts. Thanks. You forward me to t-shirt factory. Thank you.
Thank you. So the things that we did learn was like, you know, pricing out a unit so you can do some of the math on how much it'll cost to make a bunch of them. But it doesn't say anything about
how
getting a business loan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't say anything of, you know, how to talk to your factory without getting completely fucking ripped off.
Yeah.
Because that'll happen when you're a noob.
Oh,
for sure.
For sure. Who, what kind of advocates are there out there that could help young designers or new people in the industry navigate those waters?
Any sort of, like, especially here in Canada, I don't know how it works in other parts of the world, but again, this comes back to not being an art, not being a trade. Are there any grants or subsidies or loans specific to this industry that you can apply for? Are there better areas of the country if you are doing different types of, you know, if you want to do athletic wear, come to Vancouver. If you want to do outerwear, go to Toronto, or, you know, like, stuff like that. So it'd be nice to know that sort of thing so you can figure out how to get money. How do you get venture capitalists? How do you get a bank loan? What do you need to do? What do I need to show?
Mm-hmm.
Do I bring in a piece of clothing? Do I make a portfolio? What do I put in the portfolio?
Fashion,
do I need my bank statements?
In the bank. Here it is. Picture this.
Runway.
Fashion show in the bank. Lower the lights. Bring up the strobes. Get the music pumping.
Smoke machines.
Yeah.
Get a Kardashian.
Or two.
Oh. Yeah. Do you need to put a fashion show on in a bank to get a bank loan? Maybe.
I don't know. No one told me.
We didn't learn that stuff.
I didn't know. I got kicked out.
I didn't get the loan.
I had to change banks.
They told me to do a fashion show. That's how you sell it.
Oh, man. So, yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, no program is going to be able to give you everything because it is impossible.
And there are definitely things that you will just learn along the way because you either
have to. That's the nature of life.
You won't.
Yes,
you
know? Exactly. Either the bridge will come or it will not.
Yeah.
And you will figure it out. And either you will quit or you will forge ahead.
Yeah. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of that, how to get a thing made. Like, here's all this great knowledge that we learned of how to, you know, make a beautiful collection, how to make a beautiful portfolio, logo, branding, how to talk about it, all that kind of stuff that we learned that was great.
Fantastic. And super useful.
Excellent skills.
Yeah.
Well, now what? The now what part was a bit thin.
Or even like going into it with the illusion that, oh, I'm going to learn how to sew and I'm going to learn how to make a brand for myself and then I'm going to sew all the clothes I design. Nope.
No.
The way that your business operates is a very small percentage of the way that they of the way that the government is doing. Like, where you design it and you sew it.
Well, for the most part, I sew most everything.
Yeah. But a lot of times, like, I know the way my boss does it, she doesn't sew shit.
Oh, God, I can't wait to get there.
Is calling FedEx. She is answering emails. Mm-hmm. She is, making banners for the website. She's obsessed about Instagram stories and scheduling the fucking Instagram feed. Like, the amount of time that you spend as the CEO of a luxury brand or an independent fashion brand that you're actually designing and sewing,
maybe 5%.
Tiny. So just knowing that going in, that you're gonna spend 3 days a week answering emails, and that's it.
Building a website.
How to write an email.
Maintaining a website.
How to tell people to fuck off nicely. Or how to ask some asshole nicely for something you desperately need and you need to stay on their good side. You know, again, that's more of a life, that could potentially be more of a life skill too, but, you know, a little help, you know, wouldn't hurt. Anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point. How much of it you're actually
doing. See the way these businesses operate, and I don't want that job.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather work for someone else.
Yeah.
And do the other parts of the job than that the job that we had a big photo shoot this weekend, and I'm standing in, you know, parked on the street illegally while she is schlepping 10 trips back and forth of IKEA bags and garment bags and rolling. She's like, I'm glad I'm over the age of 40 and a CEO of a luxury brand, and I'm still carrying garment bags in the rain up flights of stairs. I'm like, yeah.
In fact, one of the jokes when we were together and in school, we would joke about this all the time. Every job I've ever had has been, oh, this fashion is so glamorous. So glamorous.
Right?
Yeah. It's so glamorous.
When you're wiping the model's dirty feet before they put in the shoes you borrowed because you don't want to fuck up the shoes you borrowed. Yep, that's your job. Getting in between your toes.
Waiting for soaking wet DHL packages to come from wherever the fuck they're coming from.
Yes. And then dealing with the fallout of that. Oh my God.
It's so glamorous.
Oh man. Yes.
Yeah, I love sitting on the phone with FedEx for 2 hours
while I'm not getting your problem resolved.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really fucking fun to do that after you spent
hours and hours
and money to get what you want.
Yes, to get it to that point, you only have FedEx.
Fuck it up.
Joys of shipping, also a great episode.
Oh, that was a fun one. That was, yeah. I mean, I was going to say we could do an entire episode on shipping, but we did. So
we
go
did
back
entirely,
and
we also like complaining. So there's also that. This also was a lot of cathartic complaining for us.
Yeah, we should have a shipping person come on and be a guest, so we can just be like, why the fuck can't you do this?
How do you calculate duties? What is going on? What wizardry is this?
Who makes up these rules? Because there's no rhyme or reason.
Like, no matter what way you cut it, I'm the one getting fucked.
Yeah.
If I'm the shipper or the receiver, still getting fucked.
In Canada.
Yes.
In the States.
More specifically in Canada. In the States, it might be different. In
the States, I think it's different because...
You just ordered from the States, and it's fine.
You just ordered from the States. Everything is in the States. It's no big deal.
And they have this huge infrastructure already set up, and it's fine.
There's no border.
No. And they put it on a pony, and they send it across the state, and then boom, there you got it.
Bang, all right. Ain't no thing.
Anyway. No.
Anyway.
Maybe that's the bad vibe. Let's move on to some more posy vibes.
Yay, fun. Posy vibes.
If we were to teach, what would we teach? I'm open to the idea of going and teaching eventually. I need a lot more experience and more time in the actual industry before I would.
But
go
you would
teach,
be, but you would probably be the. Like, I don't think any of our teachers actually were educated to be teachers.
No.
Which was which I think was a really interesting experience. But you actually are educated to be a teacher.
I do. I barely ever touched it.
Three of us, you're the one who has. Like the most business going into teaching in fashion.
Oh, well. As long as not post-secondary, though. Because my training is in high school teaching.
But I don't think that'll matter in a fashion school.
No.
Yeah.
It's a lot of very, very immature people, I'm sure.
Exactly.
It might even prison company included.
You might even work to your advantage.
Combination of that and being a mom, we'll figure it out.
We'll
make our way through. But what would you teach, Evan?
I always thought collection development would be fun to teach.
You're good at that.
That is, I think, my specialty.
You're good at
that. You want to explain that a little bit more?
So it's taking the creative and actually planning out how you're going to produce your collection. All of your samples, getting from the creative point of view, getting down to the paper, styles, potential combinations, like making sure you have a balanced product offering. Making sure you don't design a collection.
Cohesive.
The aesthetic is cohesive. Like it all has like the same kind of vibe and story, and you're telling a story through this collection. You know, and you can tell a story with a collection in Banana Republic, and you can do it on a Couture runway. It's like the same kind of process. And I think it makes for good clothes.
Makes for a good show.
And it makes for a good show. And collection development leads into so many other areas of the structure of the company. It goes into marketing, it goes into PR, it goes into all of these other things. So
branding,
styling,
like, styling, all of it.
Photo shoots, like it goes into all of those areas. So if it's done properly from that, and if it's done clearly and properly from the beginning of the conceptualization of a collection, conceptualization, then I think it makes it easier to do the rest that comes after. and this and what is being done in conjunction with it as well, obviously, because you're marketing a collection, usually you're planning the marketing of it while you're designing the collection.
And you want that to be, you want that to make sense too. If you have a really jumbled up collection that is a bunch of shit that kind of like looks similar, but is kind of disjointed, and you will know, like, it's hard to, it's one of those things that's hard to describe, but you'll know when you see it.
Yeah.
You can tell. If you see a runway and you're like, well, why does that, would want the same woman wear that who wore that? Or, you know, like that sort of thing. And then, but like you said, and as you're planning that, that part of it, you're also planning what the marketing will look like, what the photo shoot will look like, what the magazine ad is going to look
and,
like.
And it's also thinking about like, what does your customer do? What do they do in their life? You know, like, do they drive their own car? Do they have to take care of children? Do they, are they a 9-to-5 job?
Do they go out?
Do they travel?
Yeah.
Do, like, you know, like, you have to think about these things about your customer and where are they wearing the clothes? And when, like, when do people wear your clothes? Like, are you a, like a fancy dress brand only, or
And you kind of reverse engineer from that,
you know. So like, you think about,
or you can try, or if you, if you have a blast of creativity and you can figure, oh, this look is great. Then you can with that train of thought, who this person is, how much money they're spending, where do they live, what the climate is, do they travel, yada yada yada. Then the rest of the collection can flow from that, and it will make more sense if you do it that way instead of just sitting in front and just banging out a bunch of looks.
And then also, instead of designing from like a fantasy, you know, because you can create this fantasy character, and that works sometimes for like, I don't know, like maybe even an evening wear brand, just like something that's, that is not supposed to be rooted in reality. But like, if you're a ready to wear brand who's designing for a fantasy, it's like, it can kind of, it goes into like,
no one will buy your stuff.
No, yeah, it just doesn't, it's unlivable, you know?
Yeah.
But
especially if you want to be a luxury brand to do that, and you're charging a fuckload of money for things.
Like look at like Brunello Cucinelli. It's exactly what it's supposed to be.
Yes.
You know, very high end, but it's everyday clothes.
Very classic.
Very classic.
Utilitarian, but luxury, high quality utilitarian clothing.
Like the most disgusting cashmere, most wonderful, supple cashmere you'll ever see in your fucking life. You know, just like,
it's an Italian menswear brand.
Yeah.
If you're unfamiliar and they with do Bruno women's Cucinelli. Too. They do women's.
Yeah. Demi Moore was their spokesperson for quite a while.
Ooh la la. Yeah. Or are you, you know, doing crop tops and bike shorts? Is that your vibe?
Yeah.
Who's going to buy that?
Well, there's been a lot of brands like that who've popped up in the last while, and a lot of them failed.
A lot of them just disappear and they don't come back.
Because like, the thing is like with the industry, like the industry will support whatever is of the moment, you know? Yes. That doesn't mean people are going to wear it.
Hashtag festival wear.
Yeah.
It's Coachella. Yeah. There's a lot of, I'm sure there's a lot of brands that just pop up for 2 weeks of the year and then they're gone.
Yeah. Or they switch to something else for 6 months and they switch back to
that's
it,
why,
you know?
That's why like fast fashion
they
brands
flip the
are
sign
so...
on the door and like, you know. Yeah.
Like I saw that so much at Topshop. Like there was so much product and it could be restyled and changed into so many different, I don't know, moods or points of view. It's like, yeah, it was really weird to work in fast fashion in that way. And I was working intimately with the product because I was a merchandiser. So we got like all of the briefings on like what all of the collections were inspired by and like where the inspiration came from and blah, blah, blah. And a lot of it was just kind of bullshit. You know, there's kind of like, I mean, when you have like huge design teams, like 70 people design teams,
there's no way you can get,
you're not going to get a cohesive story together. You know, it's going to be so hodgepodge and so like, someone can say the mood is witchy.
And what then does that you mean to me and you?
You could go in some, and then therefore in that one witchy collection, there's like four different offshoots. One of them is denim based. One of them is silk based and lace based. And the other one has leather and studs. And the other one is more of like a feminine flowery witch. And then all of a sudden this is all thrown in a corner together and you know, it's just like,
and then your merchandiser
and then I'm, and then, and then the merchandiser has to deal with the bullshit, you know? So
well, I guess that's why brands, I'm going to take Aritzia one, like while you have in-house, while you have you have these in-house brands, you have, you know, 8 in-house brands. So you, if you have a 70 person design team, if you split them up into 10 labels,
it's a lot more cohesive.
It's a lot more cohesive because you can tell this is for the office. This is for camping, or I don't know. This is for riding bikes. Like, I don't
know.
For
the weekend.
Yeah, this is for the weekend. Yeah. This is for, you know, going to the opera.
I love that Aritzia camping
collection. And then you can fill... It was a good one.
Oh, you guys, hashtag camping. Check out my silk plaids.
Oh. So nice.
Did you buy anything from the collection?
The camping collection.
Yeah. Camping collection.
She's wearing a red sweater now.
If anyone was going to, it would have been me. When they describe their customer, it's just me. It's just a picture of me.
Painting. It's fine.
Camping, but make it fashion. Mm. Actually, camping is ironically having a huge moment that is lasting way longer than I thought it would. But there you go. Whatever.
I think it's humanity's need to try and prepare itself for the impending apocalypse.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. People feel like they want to try and survive on the land.
But look
interesting.
Cute. But look cute at the same time.
Interesting.
But we can.
Yeah.
Camping, but cute.
Sweet. I think you'd be really good at that.
What? Yeah, I think that would be a great
teaching
teacher.
That class.
Yeah, I think about it in a different perspective too. You know, we're not saving lives here. You know, but if we're gonna
yeah,
then like I think like no one like maybe none of our teachers ever put that on us, like making fashion seem like this so it was so important. They always kind of kept that in context, and I think that was a good way to learn about fashion, because when I walked in the door, I had every fucking fantasy in my head.
Absolutely,
you know. You know, I thought I was going to be a couturier. Laugh.
Sure. Hey, man. Still good. One day.
I mean.
Yeah, my friend.
I mean, my work is kind of on the precipice.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got to manage those expectations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I think our school did a good job. I think our fashion education did a good job of that within that framework of like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is
still keeping you motivated, still keeping you inspired.
But being realistic about what kind of designer you are.
Yeah. Yes. And thinking about why are you doing this? What are the...
What are you willing to put in and what are you wanting to get out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How many people did we have drop out after two terms?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Like half?
Half of them at least. Yeah.
Or switch programs, go to something else. I probably half. Mm-hmm. The number of people that we started our program with versus the number of people that we actually graduated with.
Or something when we started.
It's probably a third.
Yeah, we graduated with six or seven.
Yeah. And then of that people who graduated, how many people are actually still working in the industry? Another half of that. Because some of them aren't, like, they're yoga teachers and they're spa techs and they're, you know, like, well, I don't know, whatever else.
Which, by the way, if you are in fashion school or if you're thinking about going to fashion school, that's fine.
Yeah, totally fine.
Don't worry about it.
Don't feel, beholden to that.
If you get into fashion school, on the other side of it, if you get into fashion school and you're like, you know what? This is not what I thought it was going to be.
Fucking
don't
leave.
Cut your losses.
You know, like, the fuck out. Fine. Yeah. Shop around. Talk
Life's
to your teachers.
Short.
Yeah. You know, maybe like in
we're
our
state. We're talking to three lifers here.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to be in fashion.
Talk to your instructors and saying, is this just a hard patch that I'm getting through? Like, these are the issues that I'm feeling are propping up and I'm not feeling good about it. Is this something that I can power through or is this something I should cut my losses and move on?
And maybe it means you take a job.
If you have a good teacher, they will be honest with you and say, you know what? Maybe this isn't for you.
And maybe it means you take a job.
Or you know what? I see something in you and you can figure it out.
Yeah. You go to the Aritzia website and you say, what jobs are actually open for me that I could, or what's a retail brand that I love that I could get in store?
Yeah.
See if this, dip my toe in a safe way where I'm making money instead of spending money.
Yeah.
Is this something I'm actually going to enjoy? And then try fashion school next time. Like, it's no big deal. Like, truly.
Yes.
I mean, speaking as someone who did a whole job, whole school, whole career, and then left that one behind. Yeah. I mean,
I'm an advocate for quitting.
Yeah.
If shit ain't working.
Absolutely.
Move on.
Yeah, move
you
on.
You don't owe anybody anything.
No.
Yeah.
Test it out. It's the bank, and then you absolutely know them something. Yeah. And they will not let you forget it.
Fashion show in the bank.
Just put on a fashion show, and then all your debts are absolved. It's fine.
Oh, God. The bank would owe me money if I got money every time I did a fashion show in the last.
Shit. Abby, what would you teach?
Oh, man. I think I would like to teach, like, basic construction.
I think you'd be
that would be fun. Like, not necessarily, like, making couture gowns or, you know, bridal or anything like that. But I think if somebody needed to know how to make a shirt, how to... A bunch of different kinds of pockets, that sort of thing. I think I would like that.
Zippers.
Yeah, how to put in zippers. Yeah.
I think you would be the most fun teacher
and things
to have
like
for that.
Machine maintenance and like tools and like how to use tools and how to figure out what tools
to
you
use
like
when,
because some people use chalk, some people use pens, some people use nothing. And like you just giving, you know, figuring out how to make it make the most sense to you. And then I remember learning like, oh, there's a bunch of ways you can do this. And also, if none of the ways are working and you just figure out a way that works for you that isn't the one in the book that gives you the same result,
right?
That's fine.
Yeah.
And if it works for you and you can reproduce it and make it consistently the same, who cares?
Have at her.
Go nuts.
Yeah.
So I think that would be really fun. And I think I would enjoy it. And I think I could make the people also enjoy it.
I was just going to say, you would pump up your students and make them enjoy the process of learning how to make a fucking double welt pocket.
Because it is one of the most frustrating things to ever make in your life. Yeah. Because there is a steep learning curve and you will fuck it up.
Yes,
and so many times.
You will.
Another joke
and you
that
will
we
want
had?
To throw yourself out the window. You
oh,
were
we all
going
did.
To
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You were gonna get so frustrated. So trying to find a way to push through that. Or we to also, work around it or whatever, you know? Or take a break. Go have a Wonder Bar and go sit outside for 10 minutes.
We also had a joke that still comes up when we were in fashion school was just do it right the first time.
Like, idiot, right. Why'd you Duh. Fuck it up a bunch? Just do it right the first time.
It's way less time. Way less stress.
Silly me. I was doing it wrong a bunch and then I got it right. I was doing it wrong. What a waste of energy. But God, I think that I would think be really fun.
I think it would be. I think you'd kill it.
Yeah.
You'd be so
fun. Make a tote bag. And then you make a dress, and then you make a jacket, or whatever, you know, like.
And because that's the other thing, too, is like what we were just talking about. So there were a lot of people who left our program because of the sewing. There was a lot of sewing. Sewing is not intuitive.
Nope.
Mm-mm. It is not easy.
Mm-mm. And it takes skills. Stuff, it takes dexterity.
It's muscular.
It takes. Yep. Yeah, it's physical. It's mental. Like the ability to think in 3D. Is not an ability that everybody has.
Yeah.
It's not a skill.
It's not just sewing straight lines and curves.
No, it is
in a machine.
It is a three-dimensional object that has an inside and an outside, and you're constantly going back and forth between them. And if you're doing different layers of things and having to figure out that, and oh my God, I still need to look up how to do a fly sometimes. I keep forgetting, like, how do you sandwich the thing and the thing and the where did the zipper go? And anyway, but yeah, it's not intuitive, but it is. Acquirable.
Yeah.
And it's extremely rewarding.
And it's also a thing like the more it's definitely a 10,000 hours thing. Like you will get better the more that you do it. And it will get easier. You just need to
grind through.
Yes.
But you do
and make
have
friends
to,
with that stitch ripper.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yes. I'm sure
if you're gonna get frustrated every time you're gonna stitch something out, stitch rip something, you're gonna forget it. You're not gonna make it.
Yeah, it's not for you. No. Sewing's not for you.
No.
That's when you take a step back, you eat a Wonder Bar, you check in when the last time you ate a real meal.
You go into the bathroom, if you had a glass of water.
Do you need to pee? Do you need to pee? Do you need to call your mom?
Have you changed your underwear lately?
That's like, fine too. Those are all real things that will happen.
Will help. And it will help because you forget that you're a human being sometimes. Maybe you get tunnel vision.
When you're literally attached to a machine.
Yeah, you get tunnel vision.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, as you're learning, all you see is the flaws. All you see is somebody else would come in and say, oh my God, that dress is gorgeous.
Look at that beautiful zipper. And you're like, but my darts are fucked up.
You're like, don't even look at the hem. Don't even talk to me.
Don't even look at the hem.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this is days, but like, don't look at the inside of that pocket.
I've been having some people over to look through my archive, which you guys should do. You should come over and look through
my
archive.
Oh my God, I'd love to.
And we can reminisce. Fun.
Yes, and we can see the evolution.
Yeah. My brother took out a piece of mine, which I won't talk about on the podcast. and I just like, oh my God, I remember making that. I was like, all these people were cutting out those strips, and then me and this person made the skirt, and then this person cut it out, and it was just like, I was like, yeah, I remember like every little, like
second of that.
Every second of making that one skirt.
Yeah.
You know?
And then the other ones, you're like, when did I make that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was like, I made that, and my brother's like, where did you make this? And he's like, I don't remember seeing you make that. And I was like,
where was I?
Did I make that at the school? Did I make that at someone's house?
Was I in a fever dream?
Yeah, like, I don't like.
Did that start as something and end up as something else?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
One of those?
Yeah.
It was so traumatic, I just blocked completely the memory blocked entirely. Yeah.
It's gone
just
forever.
Compartmentalized deep in my brain.
I found a picture of me sewing in the sewing room the other day.
Oh, no way, at school?
Yeah, at school.
Too funny.
Let me see if I can find it. Yeah.
Well, we're getting later, Katie. What would you teach?
Yeah.
I think I would probably teach something along the, like, branding lines, but probably writing. Something writing-wise. Like, how to write a product description, how to write, how to name things. A
bio for yourself.
A bio.
Crying out loud.
How to give yourself a press tone of release. Voice,
yeah.
Press release. All of those things take a voice, and you think like, man, anyone can write this. It's not that easy.
Mm-mm.
It's Ashley Said, our first guest, talked a lot about reading press releases
yeah.
and like getting a good idea of how to write well by reading well-written press releases
yes.
and how to, mm-hmm. like, what are they saying and how are they saying it in such a way that you get a good
I'm
idea,
interested
you're and, interested, yeah. you can, the things that you then see correlate to what you're reading about, mm-hmm. they're not completely disjointed, there's a clear tone of voice, there's a clear point of view,
yeah.
that kind of stuff, without writing 1,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
don't need, that's the hardest
You need 100 words.
You need 100 words and then you need to cut it in half.
Yeah.
yeah. And then you need to think about if you're, you know, writing it on a postcard to give away as a media thing.
Sure.
How does that work? Mm-hmm. How many words then do you need to cut off when that happens? So stuff like that I think would be super fun. And like branding and
social
brand
media
voice.
Where you have a limited amount of characters or, you know,
totally.
Or specific parameters that you have to be able to hit within the limited, you know.
Definitely. Whatever. Things like
writing on Twitter and writing on Instagram and then writing on, you know, on your own website.
Writing a meta description for a Google search.
God, yes.
Is different
uh-huh.
than writing a product description, then writing a tweet, then writing a hang tag.
Yeah.
You know, they're all different. They all have to sound similar enough.
But I think they each are used and have a very specific purpose.
Yeah.
And different people, like, is it an industry professional that's reading it or is it a customer that's reading it?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a PR person or is it another designer? You know.
Also, like, straight up grammar.
Straight up just technical writing.
How do you spell this word?
Yes.
Where does the hyphen go?
How do you write a letter?
Do I use a semicolon? You probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
I think that would be pretty fun because it's fun to, like as a teacher, I think it'd be fun to see everybody's work. Like Evan, you were saying, like seeing a collection and helping sort of narrate that collection. You're doing it in a more visual tailoring kind of putting it together mm-hmm. way, like more of the whole, whereas the writing of it is necessary. So you still get to like see all the clothes
yeah.
and like
yeah, yeah, yeah.
participate in that side
yes.
of things. But being able to talk about it and write
to
about
sell.
It, to sell it and tell yourself and attract the right customer
yeah.
was important.
Be it a direct to market or wholesaler or whatever, right?
All that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be pretty fun.
Oh my God.
And I probably where I have the most experience.
And super useful as a person needing doing those things.
Yeah. There's nothing more annoying than reading a hang tag or reading a description of something online and you're like, what even is
huh?
this? How,
what are you trying to say?
Why wouldn't you put...
Why do I care?
Yeah, why isn't the fabric content on
I was going to say, why don't you... You didn't even tell me what the shirt is made out of.
Yeah, why? I hate that.
Yeah.
Why isn't there dimensions on the size of this backpack? Can I fit a laptop
yeah,
in
like,
it?
Will my water bottle fit in this pocket?
Yeah.
How many lip balms can I fit in the front pocket?
Yeah.
That's what I need to know.
Also, is a dude going to be wearing it? Because he's probably not going to care about lip balms. But what might he care about instead? Let's mm-hmm. talk about
hockey
that.
Hockey cards.
Yeah.
Will my hockey cards fit? Inquiry minds want to know.
Pocket protector.
What are the things the guys have? That's it. Just hockey
condoms.
Cards.
Yeah.
Condoms and hockey cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
That's about it.
Will my really backwards baseball cap fit in here? Anyway.
I think that would be
fantastic.
That would be fun.
And that would be super fun and you'd be good at it. I think so.
Yeah. That's fun.
Cool.
Fun, guys.
Well.
Did you find your picture, Evan? We're going to have to share it with the world.
Oh, Lordy.
We'll put it on the blog.
You cutie.
What's the date stamp
aww.
On that?
I don't even know.
2011, somewhere around there.
Probably.
2012.
Oh my God, a little baby.
Look like a fucking mole rat.
Oh, we're making the corsets.
Yeah.
We're making the corsets.
Yeah.
I remember. That was like maybe garment section 3, maybe. That was one of the last
I turned that
made.
One assignment into making a whole evening gown.
Of course you
I remember that.
I made it for my cousin for her grad.
Yeah,
I remember.
There you go.
Guys, this has been a fun reminisce.
But we should probably move on.
Let's move on.
Let's take a break.
We'll come
and
right
then
back.
We'll move on.
Okay, bye.
Meow, 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 meow. Oh, yeah. We're back.
And we're back now.
Here we go. I know we can obsess.
We usually solve all the problems, but we didn't really solve any problems this break.
No.
Nah, it's all right. It's fine.
It's Monday.
We gotta take a break for ourselves every now and then.
Exactly.
Hashtag self-care. Why am I talking like this lately? What's wrong with me? I spent the weekend in Whistler drinking copiously and skiing, so I think that might be it. Yeah.
Maybe. Rubbed off on you. Be a problem. Shake it off. It's fine.
Okay.
It's only Monday.
It's only Monday.
If it's sticking around by Thursday, maybe we need to do something about it. But
maybe I have a real problem then.
Oh, but now we can obsess.
Here we go.
I can start because I know Evan's thinking.
Okay, honestly, since I moved into my new place, it's been this impending Sunset Boulevard movie musical with Glenn Close.
Yes, is that you just can't stop thinking about it?
I can't stop thinking about it.
Well, no. There you are. That's it.
Well, then there you go.
I've been listening to interviews that she's done about Sunset Boulevard. I've been watching.
Have they already shot it?
No, it goes to camera in fall.
Okay.
In LA. But it's going to be so fucking good.
No pressure.
I've been watching all of, there's professionally filmed and also pirated videos of her performing on stage in this role.
Oh, sure. Just, in rehearsals and stuff.
Is this coming from Broadway?
She's played this role twice on Broadway.
Oh, well,
she did it once in the 90s and then she did it again 2 years ago.
Right.
So it was 25 years or 22 years between.
Oh, wow.
Between roles. So she was 20 years older the second time around. It was so this is going to be fucking great.
Oh, you guys, if you have not seen Sunset Boulevard,
you need to rectify that situation immediately.
Just watch that.
So good. Yeah.
And then you can go on YouTube and watch Glenn Close's musical version, which is I don't know.
You die.
Cock-a-doodle-doo, so
just
wild and wacky and wonderful. And it's just I don't know. Glenn Close is just one of those costumes. They recreate the movie costumes for the stage version.
Really?
So all of the same costumes that she wears in the movie.
And sequins and caftans.
That black,
feathers.
That black wool suit with the white fur stole. When she
goes to Paramount. Do you think they'll shoot it in black and white?
They could.
Kind of want them to.
They could shoot it in black and white.
I'm also curious to see it in color.
I think that
it would look like in color
because the original Broadway stage show was so opulent. I think they're going
to
try.
Oh, yeah, have to be right.
They're going
to
try and do that on screen because the guy who's directing it is also a Broadway director. He's not a film director.
Interesting. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. I love
it. It's going to wait 2 years for this to happen now.
I know.
Whatever. Yeah. this is going to be an obsession that's got
apparently it's supposed to come out next year.
Okay. So they shoot it in the fall and then it comes out next year.
It'll come out.
It's not like it's a movie that needs to have a lot of special effects or anything.
Yeah. So they'll shoot it next fall and then it'll come out
a year later for Oscar season.
Yeah, exactly.
After October or November. Yeah.
I love that I talked to you about this movie
10 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, we probably knew each other for 6 weeks. And I'm like, I gotta see this movie.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yeah, okay. And I'm like, no, you don't understand.
How important this is going to be for your life.
This is
going
to be.
This is the greatest gift you'd ever give him.
It might be.
Literally.
It might be.
Yeah. Literally.
Other than your presence, which is a present.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But yes, the gift of Sunset Boulevard.
I love it. How often it comes up. It's so great. You know what? Welcome.
It's a gift that never.
It's very formative. Absolutely.
I think the first time I saw it, I loved it just because it was fucking wild.
It's a great movie.
It's wacky. Yeah. And
it's noir, but it's
camp.
Yeah. Camp, yeah, and it's also weird, super narcissistic.
Over the top. Yeah. Super Hollywood at the same time.
Yeah. It's so.
It can be noir and Hollywood.
It's all of those weird.
And then
things.
Just throw an Andrew Lloyd Webber score and musical onto that. And that is just
there you go.
It's the fucking craziest thing you'll ever see in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I don't know. It's just I've seen, now that I've watched a couple of different people play this role, it's just some people try and pull it back and make it restrained. And I'm like, no, it's
That's not
supposed to be.
No, she's over
completely
the top
unhinged.
Yeah.
She's this character is completely
clinically
certifiably unhinged.
Yes.
She's that the tethers of her in reality have been severed a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have gone. Atrophied and they are long gone. They are fossils.
And trying to play her as if she's a real person or if she's even
approaching reality
or
has has lived in any semblance of reality in 40 years.
He's doing a disservice to this, to the whatever they call it.
It's going to be so good.
Yeah.
We should do a Hag screening.
Oh.
We should do a Hag event and go
We should.
Oh, we should.
Yeah.
Mark your calendars. We'll do it.
In a year and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thursday, April 9th. Abby, what's your obsession?
Oh, my obsession is I got a book for Christmas and I finally read it and it's amazing and it makes it warms my heart. It's the Bill Cunningham memoir.
Oh,
called Fashion Climbing. He wrote it before he passed. And it, Bill Cunningham, for the uninitiated, was he invented street styling, street photography.
Go watch Bill Cunningham, New York.
It's just on Netflix.
Press
it's on
right now.
YouTube. It's on M2M, I believe, our beloved M2M app. But so he would just ride around New York City on his bike, taking pictures of people in awesome outfits. And what was awesome to him, mm-hmm. he did not follow what the magazines wanted or what Hollywood wanted or whatever. He just, if you caught, you could have been a nobody and you could have been Queen of Monaco.
Yeah.
And it did, like, if you caught his eye, that was it. But before he became that, before he was that, which was the majority of his career, he was this young gay man from Massachusetts who grew up in an Irish Catholic family who 100% rejected his gayness and his desire to be in the fashion industry. And he said, fuck you to both of those ideas and moved to New York City and became a hat maker. He started working in department stores, and then he got into hat making and yada, yada, yada. So he had this quite a significant and illustrious career as a hat maker in the 1960s and 70s, living in New York City, hanging out with all these amazing people and making hats.
Doing the do.
Doing the do and going to parties and, you know, sneaking into things. And he was always very humble and very, he always kind of kept it at arm's length. Like, he was part of it, but also not part of it. Mm-hmm. He was always the observer. He was never really the participant, right? He was always there just watching people and taking it all in. He was an amazing judge of character and person. He was amazingly insightful and observant about human nature and human and interaction and interpersonal relationships and how you react to people, both professionally and how he aligned himself with kind of the underdogs as well as the big players. Like, he was able to...
He was not impressed by status. It
no.
did not matter.
And he was able to go between the levels of these hierarchies that were, you know, made up.
Yeah, and he knew
and he saw right through
every single angle of it, yeah.
And he saw right through it. But this book, it's like I said, it's him. It's reading from his perspective about starting these businesses and getting fucked over here and succeeding here and all these glamorous things over here and then, you know, sleeping in a bathtub too. Like, it's fascinating. He is so sweet and so charming and just a wonderful person. And they're just like, if I had a highlighter to just highlight memorable things that are just good life advice and a good mindset of how to... He was so... judgment free for people, because I think that's what he had as growing up, as being a gay man in an Irish Catholic family who rejected anything even remotely non-masculine. And he learned, again, meeting all these people from all these different walks of life, that we're all the same and no one is better than anybody else, and we're all equally deserving of love and acceptance and support and, you know, positive thinking and all that sort of. And he's just the sweetest, or was the sweetest, sweetest man. And he had a lot going on underneath the, you know, the surface that you would never even know about, because he was so affable and smiley and just seemed so nice all the time. But knowing all the stuff that he went through and anyway. I don't want to spoil it too much, but I cannot recommend it enough. I read it super quickly. It's a very easy read, and it's so charming. And there's lots of pictures inside, too, of him and, like, these big costume balls. He was a hat maker, so he would make all these crazy hats and masks for people. And then, like, go to, like, Florence and be in, like, a giant fashion show in, like, an Italian castle. And then again, like, yeah, sleep in a bathtub, like, go home, because he was always, he was so humble about everything that he always served himself last.
Yeah, don't every take cent, money. Remember that whole thing?
Yes,
don't
every take cent money. That he ever had, he for his business and this part of his business, he put in his business. He wouldn't have shoes. His seamstress or his milliner or whatever associate would like put cardboard in the bottom of his shoes because they had holes in it, and he refused to buy a new pair because he would rather go buy flowers or supplies to buy hats than, you know, a belt. Mm-hmm. But that again, that just made him more lovable and more attractive to people who are in that industry of, especially New York City, where everything's so about status and yada, yada, yada. And then you can see him and he's a real
breath of fresh
air.
Yes,
he's a real person, you know, with his feet on the ground and is, you know,
truly unique,
but his head in the clouds mm-hmm. at the same time.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, Fashion Climbing by Bill Cunningham. Cannot recommend enough. I have the hardcover version, and when you take the book jacket off, the hardcover is the same blue as his chore coat that he is famous Aww. For. It's the cutest. Even the book itself is adorable.
I'm going to cry.
So, anyway, that's my obsession. And then I've been watching a little bit of the movie here and there because I watched it quite a few years ago, and it's like crying. It's so
I probably watch awesome. It once a year.
Yeah.
So good.
He's just the cutest and the sweetest and the so most good. Wonderful human.
Such a good, good person.
Yes. The likes of which we will never see again.
That's true. I'm going to ask you to borrow that when we get upstairs.
Absolutely.
And then I'm just going to put it in my purse and I'll bring it back next time.
Sounds great. Like I said, you'll read it super quick. It's fine.
I'll probably read it tonight.
Yeah.
My obsession, this will surprise no one. There is a new...
Try me.
BBC Planet Earth series.
Oh, yes.
Called Our Planet.
Yes, I've seen it.
I've only seen 3 episodes, but I mean...
Not for long.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. What more do I need to say?
Yeah.
David Attenborough.
Nature.
It's the only... Those dogs are the only ones that I like watching because they're so good. I'm so spoiled.
They're so beautiful.
I'm not going to watch any other dumb fucking whatever ABC bullshit.
Yeah.
No. Give me the goods. That's all I want. There's this crazy, in the first episode, there's this crazy, like, series, whatever, capsule, whatever it's called, chapter, for lack of a better word, let's say, about the ice calving off of glaciers in, like, Greenland and stuff.
That's the one with the walruses I've heard. I started reading about the walruses and I had to stop.
I don't know about the walruses.
Okay, maybe that's episode 2.
I don't know about the walruses.
There's some climate shit happening that's, like, super depressing, but anyway.
Yeah, this one is, like, This is a desperate call for help in Woo! Terms of climate change, for sure, which is heartbreaking. But the footage that they have of these glaciers calving and breaking off
wow.
is so fucking wild. If you have any idea how big, which most people don't, have any idea
of
how
scale
big
of these things,
an actual glacier is, or how, even if you're looking at a picture of a glacier, how big that little fragment of ice from 4 kilometers away mm-hmm. actually is, the power, it just blows my mind. It just like, you just have to like stop and be like, oh
fuck,
my God. It is insane. There was a few years ago in Jasper where I grew up, there's this really famous walk-in area. It's called Cavell, Mount Edith Cavell, named after the nurse in World War One. And there's like this part of this trail, it's called the Glacier Walk. And there's it's where the glacier sort of comes down and it hits this pond, this glacial lake. And up a couple hundred meters, whatever, up higher is like the parking lot and all of this stuff. Well, a couple of years ago, this like pretty big piece of ice, which when you look at the size of what you're looking at, is not that big. It does not look that big. It's like when you're looking at it from, you know, the parking lot, it's like, you know, maybe the size of your fist from the distance, but it is an enormous piece of ice that fell away, that fell off the side of the mountain, literally. Just the ice just collapsed. Off.
Or yeah.
And the slide, like the rock slide and the debris that came off of that little piece of ice flooded flooded like the little picnic area below with meters of of dirt and debris and water, washed away a bunch of stuff, washed away the outhouses, buried the picnic tables, buried a third of the parking lot from this like little piece.
Just little tiny bit.
I mean, it wasn't little. It was absolutely massive.
Relatively. But, yeah.
So like, I think about that and then I look at this footage of like these buildings this isosize of buildings coming off. It's crazy. It's like dream scenario vacation.
To
go and see, like,
wow,
that would be unbelievable. Anyway, that's only episode one. I think I've seen three. We were up in Whistler and getting ready to go on Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon. We were helping tidy up and we just had it on in the background. And I did nothing to help tidy up. I'm just like doing dishes, like just making myself look busy, but I cannot take my eyes off of this thing. Oh, that's what I'm going to do tonight. That's why I have to leave.
You got
to
go home. You got to get out of here.
Anyway, I'm sure I'll have more to say the next time we talk because I cannot get enough of these docs. I don't really like animals in real life. Like, I don't need... We talked about this last week, actually. Dogs, yes. But most other animals, if there's an animal coming towards me, I'm not interested. I'm not comfortable.
Yeah, sure.
I don't like it.
Bugs, you're not going to seek it out it. For sure. Yeah.
No, thanks. If it's cute, fine.
Raccoon?
I don't care.
Yeah. Either way.
Yeah. They're fine.
But you're not going to go to like Kenya and go see the gorillas?
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
I'll go on a safari if the conditions are correct, but I'm not going to go to that like hotel where the giraffes come and eat off of your plate. Yeah. Like, no. No. I ordered this pasta
specifically. I want to eat it.
Don't eat my ravioli. That's how I like... That's how I like animals.
Over there, behind a screen.
Beautifully photographed.
In their own habitat.
In their own habitats.
Yeah.
Happy-ish.
Not coming at me. I don't want to have anything to do with them in my real life.
You're not
there.
They're not here.
I'm never going to go and have a monkey climb on my shoulders. It will never fucking happen.
Or hold under a snake.
No. Hard no. Remember when you were in Brazil, wherever the hell you were last summer, and you're like, oh, we had to go do this thing, and you had to hold the snake or you couldn't go. I'd be like, well, I'm not fucking going.
No, I'm not getting lunch then, because I'm not holding that fucking snake.
Don't fucking think for a second I am on board with that.
Her name was Princess. She was lovely.
Fine. Great. Let her live her dumb life. I don't care. I'm not touching
dumb
it.
Dumb snake life.
Take a beautiful
not interested.
Take a beautiful photo of it.
Sounds
and
great.
I will look at the picture.
Yeah.
In my
awesome.
Own in my own couch.
Take a boomerang.
Yeah.
That's how I want my head. I want a David Attenborough narrated boomerang. Yes. That's all I want.
And that's it. I will take nothing less. Well, that's exciting.
Yeah,
this is some of the best natural television.
I know. Climate change is real.
To the human existence.
We desperately need to change it.
There's photographic evidence.
Yeah. Decades of it.
Decades of it.
Of this particular one man, let alone.
Yeah. Let alone thousands of scientists across the world.
It's not a hoax. You don't get to have an opinion about scientific facts. That's, anyway.
Not how it works. Anyway.
La, 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 la.
What's it called again?
Our Planet.
Our Planet.
It's so good.
Fantastic.
Anyway, that's Netflix. Me. Surprise, surprise.
Yoink, 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 yoink. Very on brand for you, Catherine.
That's me. I'm pretty predictable.
Sweet.
So thanks, guys. Yeah, thank you again, Serena, for your suggestion.
Yeah.
I hope I hope you learned something.
Hope
I hope
we got
it was
somewhere.
Helpful.
Yeah, let us know.
Who knows? I mean, I don't really know. You know.
We're just
talking
like,
into the void.
Yeah, we're just like throwing shit at the wall and hoping something will stick, really.
Maybe somebody will come by and see it or listen to it. Who knows?
Yeah.
You guys, thanks so much for listening.
Yes. Find us. Social media. Email. Fashion Eggs.
If you like
we're
it.
We're the only ones out there, so just Google it.
Just Google it. Tell your friends.
Yes, please.
If you're in fashion school, tell your friends who are in fashion school with you that you cannot go a day without your hags in your ears.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not that's true, I have no idea, but
you can
tell
still
your friends.
Say, you can still say it.
Yeah.
Tell that lie.
Regardless of whether it's true or not.
And subscribe and give us some nice ratings. That's always good. That helps us grow. We have basically a $0 budget for this situation. Uh-huh. So that actually
will be super helpful. Yep.
So yeah, go do that. And know that we love you.
But we love fashion more.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.